The following Dharma talk was given at Common Ground Meditation Center in Minneapolis, Minnesota.
I can't remember if I heard this or read this a few weeks ago, but somebody said that, you know, there's been for many generations a story about the Buddha being reincarnated again. And what was suggested was it wouldn't be one person. The embodiment of that Buddha wisdom would be amongst a large group of people. And this story made me think of it. The Shambhala prophecy is told by Joanna Macy. Coming to us across 12 centuries, the Shambhala prophecy comes from ancient Tibetan Buddhism. The prophecy foretells a time when all of life on earth is in danger. Great barbarian powers have arisen. Although these powers spend much of their wealth in preparations to annihilate each other, they have much in common. Weapons of unfathomable destructive power, and technologies that lay waste our world. In this era, when the future of sentient life hangs in the frailest of threads, the kingdom of Shambhala emerges. You cannot go there, for it is not a place. It is not a geopolitical entity. It exists in the hearts and minds of Shambhala warriors. That is the term the prophecy used, warriors. You cannot recognize the Shambhala warriors when you see him or her, for they wear no uniform or insignia, and they carry no specific banners. They have no barricades on which to climb or threaten the enemy, or behind from which they can hide to rest or regroup. They do not even have home turf. Always they must move on the terrain of the barbarians themselves. Now the time comes when great courage, moral and physical courage, is required of the Shambhala warriors, for they must go into the very heart of the barbarian power, into the pits and pockets and citadels where the weapons are kept, and dismantle them. To dismantle weapons in every sense of the word, they must go into the corridors of power where decisions are made. The Shambhala warriors have the courage to do this because they know that these weapons are manomaya. They are made inside, made by the human mind. They can be unmade by the human mind. The Shambhala warriors know that the dangers threatening life on earth are not visited on us by some extraterrestrial power, satanic deities, or preordained evil fate. They arise from our own decisions, our own lifestyles, and our own relationships. So in this time, the Shambhala warriors go into training into the uses of two weapons. The weapons are compassion and insight. Both are necessary, the prophecy foretells. The Shambhala warriors must have compassion because it gives the juice, the power, the passion to move. It means not to be afraid of the pain of the world. Then you can open to it, step forward and act. But the weapon by itself is not enough. It can burn you out. So you need the other. You need insight into the radical interdependence of all phenomena. With that wisdom, you know that it is not a battle between good guys and bad guys, because the line between good and evil runs through the landscape of every human heart. With insight into our profound interconnectedness, you know that actions undertaken with pure intent have repercussions throughout the web of life. Beyond that, beyond what you can measure or discern. By itself, that insight may appear too cool, conceptual, to sustain you and keep you moving. So you need the heat of compassion. Together, these two can sustain us as agents of wholesome change. They are gifts for us to claim now in the healing of the world. Healing of the world. Many in the Tibetan lineage believe that this is the time of an ancient prophecy. If so, perhaps we are among those Shambhala warriors. Next to last sentence made me think about this Jewish concept of Tikkun Olam, which when I heard about it some 20 years or so ago, I was really inspired by it because it basically translates as to heal the world. And the responsibility of every good Jew is to be acting from that belief that we are all here with a responsibility to heal the world. And I keep thinking that in a lot of spiritual traditions, you can always find something that might really resonate with you personally, regardless of what tradition it's from. So it, to me, begs the question of learning from each other, listening to one another in a very deep way. A lot of these really ancient spiritual or religious traditions, there's gold or diamonds in each one that can have some real relevance to remaking the world and being a part of the birthing of something that transforms all of our lives thoroughly, profoundly, compassionately, courageously. So, as you know, I asked my daughter, Simone, to come and give a presentation about co-counseling. It's a very powerful tool. In your handouts that I gave you, there's one page that gives us kind of a summary or overview of what co-counseling is. And once again, we can give you, before you leave, contact information for two of the leaders within that local community, a woman named Sharon Helleber. Hildeber. She's been involved in it for longer than she's been involved. A European-American woman who's been a teacher and a leader in that community for quite a while. And the contact person for Indigenous and people of color is our very own Simone Rindon. So we'll give you that information. And as I said before, it's really important to keep learning and to have community and to keep building community. And that will sustain us through everything. So, I'll turn it over to you.
It always scares me. No.
Is it on?
Yeah.
You see a little, oh yeah.
No?
I hear you.
Okay. So my mother got involved in co-counseling in 1981. And when I think I was about 6 years old, I got to do young people work is what we call it. And so I actually got to receive time from an adult who I actually don't think I'd be here today if I hadn't gotten that work done. So a co-counselor would come over to the house probably once a month and have special time with me. So as a young person, that was letting me have the ability to cry, shake, be angry, be in charge, because the oppression of young people is as adults around the young people are constantly telling them what to do, what not to do, how the school system just oppresses all of our children to sit still, to be quiet. And so co-counseling for me as a young person was a way to actually push up against that system. And so that's why I said I've been in it for 33 years, because I really did start really young. When I was 16. Yeah, I was 16 when I decided that I wanted to actually make co-counseling my own, and start using the processes to figure out what I needed to do for me. And so I've been, practicing co-counseling since then. One of the things that would be helpful for me before I actually get into co-counseling and the theories and stuff, is I'm going to pass the mic around, and if you could, I'm horrible with names. Tell me your name one more time. Tell me just one word of something that was good at lunch. And then just yes or no if you've ever heard of co-counseling before.
Ashley? Burritos with Simone. Yes.
Wendy. Soup. Yes.
Kristen. Sunshine. Yes.
Roxanne. Beans. And I think so.
Alan. The outdoors. And yes.
Bela. Peanut butter. No.
Kathleen, conversation. No.
Josh, spices, and yes.
Christoph, conversation. No.
Kenneth, yes.
Ginny, chocolate, and yes.
Kurt, cool breeze, and yes.
Duaba, chocolate, and yes.
Rick, granola bars, yes.
Ethan, nourishment, yes.
Jenny, discovery.
Peter, sunshine, yes.
Goddess of the morning star, goddess for short.
Sun and veggies, yes.
Thank you. So a lot of you have heard of co-counseling before, which is awesome. There are some of you that have not. And so that gives me an idea of how in depth to actually go or at what spot I actually need to start at. Right. Nope. That's, yep. And so it's important for me to let you guys know that the reason Ashley's here is for support for me. And one of the things with co-counseling, it contradicts that isolation part of doing things alone. And it also lets us know that we actually get to have each other as human beings. And that we get to be close to one another, and we get to figure out and how to work with each other to actually remember that we are really intelligent human beings, regardless of what has happened to us, whether it was systematic, whether it was all being by yourself and falling down one of the stairs when you were two and trying to learn how to go up and down stairs. So co-counseling is a tool to actually heal from those past traumas. Let me think here. So the handout that's in the packet is a nice brief chunk of what I'll talk about today. Yeah. And I actually think that happens. It happens systematically in every class background. So it's a literal when you're raised poor and not having enough and having to learn that you have to fight for your survival. Middle class people are so conditioned to like hold their spot, which keeps them very, very isolated because they're not supposed to share and they're supposed to be going for what's more. So it keeps them isolated from everybody. And when you're owning class, one of the things that I've learned through co-counseling is there's the systematic of I have to be on top. I have to be better than everybody. Or I'm nothing. And the fear of losing everything. So then you keep even more isolated because you don't want to lose anything. You don't want to be disconnected from that system. And the one thing that I love about co-counseling is that we get each other. No matter what our backgrounds were raised, no matter what was done to us or what we've done to another human being, that we actually get to notice each other on that human level. So one of the things that happens as we grow up, now whether it's intentional or not, is the systematic oppression of different people and the different labels that happen and the fears that get set in and the hurts that get set in as we're growing up. And co-counseling, when you're working with it's a peer relationship. So everybody has the same amount of time and the same playing field, I guess. And so it's how to actually help us to heal from those traumas that were set in early. So I'm just going to read this page because it has a good explanation of what co-counseling is. And then I'm going to want to have you guys practice with each other. So the nature of human beings is good, intelligent, caring, cooperative, zestful, powerful, and hopeful about the future. The reason people make repetitive mistakes, feel bad, have difficulties in their relationships, and hurt each other is because we have been hurt and had not had the chance to recover from those hurts. In a hurtful experience, the thought process is temporarily shut down. New information comes in but can't be sorted and stored properly. Instead, the hurtful memory is stored as a recording of unsorted information, painful emotion, and shut down thought process. Every aspect of the hurtful experience is stored in this recording, including all the sights, sounds, smells, and so on. Over time, the distress recordings accumulate, and we become less able to think about the areas in which we have been hurt. These distress recordings cause us to react to hurtful situations in rigid ways, instead of being able to think freshly about them and act in accordance with our thinking. Current events, which contain elements that are similar to elements of distress recording, can re-stimulate that recording. Our minds call up and are dominated by the painful memory instead of thinking about the current situation. Our present thoughts and actions are then obscured by the memory or feel of the old experience. So before I read on a little bit more. So one of the things that has been recent in my life, so I have a son who's about to turn 20. I know. He is a super senior this year. So it means it's his second year going through senior year of high school. And we're sitting down talking about, like, what does he want to do in his life? Like, what are his plans? And in my head, I'm thinking of when I was 19, I had a two-year-old. I was managing a shoe store full-time, working 70, 75 hours a week. I was, like, getting ready to buy my own house. Like, I had things in my mind, like, lined up on how you're supposed to be at 19. But in reality, I could have been home taking care of my kid. I could have been, like, there's thousands of different things that could have happened. And just because he doesn't have a job, just because he's not managing some store, doesn't make him any less of a 19-year-old than when I was 19. And so without co-counseling, I might have been really, really oppressive towards him, saying, you're not good enough. Why don't you have a job at 19? I had a job at 19. But instead, I actually get to use my intelligent thinking today and say, okay, so as a 19-year-old who's not a parent, like, what do you want to do with your life? You know, like, do you want to become a parent? Do you not want to? But actually realizing we are not the same person. And so that's sort of what that's talking about with, like, past stuff coming up and blocking what's happening in the current situation. So if we've been hurt enough in similar ways, the resulting distress recordings affect us all the time. We develop a distorted view of ourselves and the world around us, shaped by our past hurtful experiences. We call these chronic recordings. So the good news is human beings have a natural ability to heal from hurtful experiences. This natural process has simply been suppressed throughout human history. However, we can recover our vast intelligence, good feelings about ourselves, and good functioning through the use of the discharge process. Outward signs of discharge include crying, sobbing, laughing, sweating, I can never say the word that they have in here, with hot or cold skin, trembling or shaking, non-repetitive talking, and yawning. Discharge dissolves the distress recording. Reevaluation, a rethinking of misstored information, happens spontaneously. The previously misstored information becomes free of hurt and usable. Painful feelings have been drained out of it. Good perspective is restored. Flexible, creative thinking and behavior follow. As young people, we had access to this as a natural process to heal. However, for most of us, it was quickly suppressed by adults who mistakenly thought that by stopping the discharge, they could stop us from hurting. Rather than encourage the discharge, they interrupted the natural healing process. So by that, we watch little kids all the time. They're running around in the park, one trips and falls, and instead of, like, running up to them and being like, oh, that, ow, like, you get to cry. That really, really hurt. The skin knee is the hurt, not the tears, not the crying. But as parents, because probably when we were little, somebody picked us up and said, oh, shh, 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 stop crying. It's okay. Stop crying. Get up. Be tough. Go on. Rather than letting us heal, it smashes us down little bits by little bits, and it happens repetitively. So a good majority of us, we could trip and fall today and be like, oh, I'm okay. Rather than actually noticing we got hurt. That actually hurt when we fell. Which Satchi left, because one of the things that happened recently, I think it was about 2 months ago, Ashley was at my house. My daughter was home, and we have this little tiny dog, and his name is Johnny Depp. Love Johnny Depp. Yep. And she left her bone in the middle of the rug, and I tripped over it. The rug came out from under me. I like totally bit it. I mean, I just smashed hard into the floor. My knee swelled up, my elbow swelled up, and I had slid into the doorway. My first response is I rolled over and I was like, are the paintings okay? Is the dog okay? Like everything else except for myself. And if Ashley hadn't been there, I probably would have just got up and like cleaned up the water I spilt. And she goes, no, you're hurt. And so for 45 minutes, she just let me cry. She just let me cry, put her hand on my knee, and gently pressed and said, you know, like, it's hurt. And you actually get to notice that you're hurt. And, you know, like, and so I got to cry. I got to, like, discharge about falling. I got to discharge the embarrassment that my daughter watched me just completely fall. And notice that both of them didn't shut me down. They didn't say, oh, mom, you're fine. Oh, just get up and blah, blah, blah. Like, they actually sat there with me for those 45 minutes while I just discharged. With that, I still went to the emergency room because I was like, you know, maybe something's broken. Within 3 days, the swelling was gone and I didn't have to wear a brace. Like, all just from letting it heal. And actually noticing that something was wrong and letting my body discharge, that hurt. I had a similar knee injury, I think it was 4 years prior. It took me 6 months to heal from it. And if I look back at that incident and what happened earlier this year, they were pretty much a similar thing. But 4 years ago, I actually was at work. So I had to tough it out. I just got up and kept going, and never actually gave myself that time to heal from that hurt. But along with healing from any of the hurts, co-counseling, we actually get to figure out how to listen to each other and how to be thoughtfully listened to. So one of the practices is splitting time. And so one of the things I'm going to have you guys do pretty soon is pair off into twos. And so the roles in co-counseling, one person is considered the counselor, and they're the ones who listen thoughtfully, pay attention to the other person. They don't give advice. They don't say, oh, that reminds me of blah, blah, blah. They just listen to the other person. The second person is the client. And that's where the discharge and the healing happens. Like, they actually get to cry if they need to. They get to shake, yawn, tell their story. And as counselor, especially beginning, there's a lot of thoughts that'll run through your head. Like, oh, wow, that's horrible. Or, oh no, that something, something, something. And we get to just benignly pay attention to somebody else. Actually, before we do that, I want us to practice, like, actually, what does it mean to, like, have somebody tell you good things about you? And as human beings, we actually get to be connected in that good way. And so it's 3 minutes. I still want you guys to pair up. But the person who goes first gets to just tell whoever they're paired up with, like, everything good that they see about them. And the person that's taking that in, you might feel embarrassment, the words of, like, oh, no, that's not really true. Like, actually let those thoughts go through your head. And if you need to cry, if you need to yawn, if you need to shake, if you just need to, like, sweat or notice that your cheeks are red from embarrassment, whatever it may be, you get 3 minutes of just feeling that. Feeling somebody noticing you for you. And then we're going to switch. And the person that was saying nice things is now going to be told nice things. And I think there's 19 of us. 2, 4, 6, 8, 10, 12, 13, 16. Okay. So I'll keep time. So if you just turn to the person to your right and pair up and pair up and pair up. And let's go that way. And just... No, well, so basically every other one. So we're going to start with this person's right. They're a pair. You two are a pair. You two, you two. And I will set a timer for 3 minutes. So you get to decide who goes first. Lewis would be your partner. Yep. Okay. And so I'm going to get ready to say start. And then in 3 minutes, I'm going to say switch. Okay? So who's ever going first? You're on. Start. So by a show of hands, how many of you was it hard to actually take in the good things that were being said about you? Was there anybody that struggled with actually listening to the goodness? All right. And so did anybody struggle with coming up about the other person? Did that happen? So one of the things that over time with co-counseling, and it does take practice, is actually being able to look at each of you individually and notice something good about you. And notice that you could tell me some... You could probably tell me that you, at 14, killed your neighbor's cat. And I would actually know, wow, that one, that's awful. Two, what actually happened to you that made you think that it was okay at this point to kill your neighbor's cat? But without doing my own work and actually processing the stuff that happened to me, I probably would have been like, oh, I'm going to go head over here. But I actually, co-counseling's theory is that we are all human and that we are all very good, intelligent human beings, and that we actually get to expect to run into another good human being. So one of the quotes that's in here is, every single human being at every moment of the past, if the entire situation is taken into account, has always done the very best that he or she could do, and so deserves neither blame nor reproach from anyone, including self. This in particular is also true of you. And so how do we actually... Co-counseling teaches us how to listen thoughtfully and listen carefully to each other enough to help each other heal from those past moments so we're not continually making the same mistakes over and over and over. Just lost my train of thought there. So one of the things that I wanted to share with you guys, so like how hurts are set in as a young person, or has potential to set in when we're young people, is so when I was four and a half probably, my mom just had my little sister. We lived on Chicago and 38th, and we got to go up to that park, Phelps Park, I think is what it is. So I was four, my sister was six. My mom didn't know any better. She'd go ahead, go to the park, go swimming. We were there. These two girls came up to me, and I thought they wanted to play with me. And they said, "Hey, can we see how long we can hold you underwater?" Yeah. So they held me underwater. My sister noticed that I wasn't anywhere, and she finally like pushed them off of me because they were sitting on me, yanked me up. We went and told the staff person, and she reprimanded us for being there without a parent. Because my life is so diversified and not... I didn't grow up with a parent who blamed everybody else. I mean, that's probably like the easiest way I can describe it. Things weren't set in systematically like they could have been. So the two girls that sat on me were African heritage. They were pretty dark. The lady at the office space, she was a lighter African heritage woman. When I tell people that, some of their first reactions are like, "Oh, so did you grow up afraid of black people?" So it's like, well, no. Even at that age, I knew, one, I have no idea if the girls were ever intending to let me up or not, but it didn't dawn on me that because of their skin color, that's why they were holding me under the pool. But fast forward to when my daughter was three. She was in childcare. My mom was married to an African man. And so my daughter comes home. It was right around Black History Month. And she goes, "Mama, can we call my black grandpa?" And that's like, "Who? Who's your black grandpa?" Because... yes, she has Grandpa Sam. Yes, she has Grandpa Andy. She has Grandpa Leo. I was just like totally like, how did this come into play that she was labeling him rather than just saying, "Can we call Grandpa Sam?" Come to find out at school, they were talking about skin color, Black History Month, and labeling people. And I was like, oh, so this is the moment. This is the moment race and skin color was introduced to my daughter. And how, as her parent, do I actually get to contradict that? And how, as her parent, do I actually get to get in there with my little three-year-old so things aren't systematically set in the way our society wants that set in? And without... with being in co-counseling and actually taking sessions and being able to, whether it be with Ashley or somebody else in the community, some of the sessions I have when I'm client are things like, how do I actually do this and not mess up my kids? Like, what are the steps that I need to take for me so that way
I'm not constantly walking around going, don't talk to my kid, don't talk to my kid, you know? Because that's the fear. That's what I want to do, is so insulate her from everything else. And that's really not helpful either. But it's about having those hard conversations, teaching a co-counseling class, and actually not letting myself... So one of the words in co-counseling we use is re-stimulate it. And it's when... So the reason I wasn't in Panja's first part is because there was similar stuff that happened to me that I haven't worked through. And I knew that I would get super re-stimulated sitting in here while she did that first part. So instead of actually putting myself back in that spot where I feel completely re-traumatized, I actually get to take care of myself and notice that I'm taking care of myself. And if Ashley was here, I would have had a session with her and actually discharged through that time. And as we're building a community in co-counseling, one of the main things is confidentiality. And so when you're having those hard sessions, I'm going to go back to the point of have somebody killing a cat. So if somebody's working on that session, my job as counselor is to not go and tell you that Lewis killed a cat. You know, because that's his session, that's his story, and that's not my place to go and say that to anybody else. But it's also not my place if Lewis has a session and it's about graduating college and getting his master's degree, and like, that's still confidential. That's still his story to share when he's ready with everybody else. And so co-counseling has a policy of keeping things confidential. So that way there's more trust in being able to share those parts of us that have been really, really hurt. And how do we actually get to share that with another human being so we can discharge and heal from those hurts?
This talk, like all programs at Common Ground, is offered freely in the spirit of generosity. To learn more about Common Ground and its programs, or if you would like to donate, please visit our website, www.commongroundmeditation.org.
Thank you for listening. To learn how you can support the teachers and Dharma Seed, please visit dharmaseed.org/donate.